Wall Street to Main Street. It's been a little while, but it's been worth the wait. In this episode, we're going to be doing a 2019 year in review of sorts. I'm your host, Emily Advani, here with my co-host and husband, finance expert and author, Ruben Advani. Hey, Ruben.
Hi, Emily.
So the end of 2019 means the turning of a new decade in 2020. How does that feel?
It feels surreal. I feel like it crept up on us.
It did. It did. But a lot happened in 2019, and I want to take this opportunity to go through a few of these events, especially in the world of business, the economy, stock market, financial news. So I want to start by having us both list what we believe are sort of our top headlines in the world of business from 2019. From there, maybe we could delve into one or two of those, explore them a little further, and then I'd love to hear your take on some of the lessons we learned in 2019, and then what to look forward to in 2020, what to look out for. Does that sound good?
That sounds perfect.
All right, well, I'm going to start with you and your top five headlines in the world of business and finance in 2019.
Okay, well, as you know, I have been up late these last few nights scouring the internet, really giving this quite a bit of thought because it's been quite an eventful year. And I could have just as easily come up with a top 20 list, but let's stick with the top five. So I would begin moving from bottom to top. Number five, the Fed rate cuts. The Fed cut three times this past year, which was somewhat unexpected, with now where we stand, the benchmark range is at about 1.5% to 1.75%. So very low by historical standards. And in essence, something that's creating very, very low costs of financing. We can talk more about that later, but I would put that as my number five. Number four, and somewhat related to the Fed rate cuts, would be the stock market records. We've got a Dow that's hovering near 29,000. We've got a NASDAQ that's hovering near 9,000. Astronomical levels and truly an unimaginable ascent this past year. So I would rank that at least at number four. Number three, the near implosion of WeWork. Storied tale of a high-flying pseudo-tech company, which in actuality was a real estate company, at one point was valued at $47 billion. And now the valuation hovers around $10 billion. The IPO has been, for all intents and purposes, canceled, and the CEO ousted. A cautionary tale in overvaluation. Number two, Boeing. Underscored by two major tragedies, along with problems deploying a number of their new products and problems with their existing products, namely the Air Max, it's been a tumultuous year for Boeing. And it will probably continue to be a tumultuous year and possibly even a decade going forward. And number one, can you guess what my number one is?
Number one. I thought maybe Boeing was going to make the top of the list, but I know one of your favorite topics to chat about, trade war.
Yep, it is indeed my favorite topic, and you appreciate it because it helps you fall asleep at night. When I start rambling about the trade war, it puts you right to sleep.
I just know you too well that yes. Trade war was your top number one.
It was, and for good reason. I believe strongly that as much as I'm sounding like a broken record here, it was really the most influential global economic event of the year. The back and forth, the on again, off again, it was almost like a tumultuous relationship. We break up, we get back together, we break up, we're engaged, oh, we split, we're seeing other people, no, we're back together again. To me, that's what the trade war represents. The back and forth created a great deal of uncertainty and in turn a great deal of volatility in the financial markets. And that affected everything from Wall Street to Main Street. So the fact is that there's some stability now given this agreement. I would hesitate to call it a final agreement because anything is possible, especially when you have two global players like the United States and China coming to the table with quite a bit at stake. But all signs point to go, so it looks like this will create some stability for the foreseeable future.
And the trade war really permeated a lot of the other business headlines, effects on the stock market, possibly was part of the reason why the Fed kept rates so low. I mean, it makes sense that it's your number one.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think you can point to the trade war as having an influence in some way, shape, or form in just about each of my other four list makers.
Okay, well, I'm going to give you mine, and it turns out we have a few of the same on the list. I will start with my number five, which probably has nothing to do with the trade war, maybe it does, but the launch of Disney Plus. And I think this really speaks to the changing landscape of streaming models, and where our consumption of media is going. So to me, that was an important event in 2019.
I would have put that on my top 10 list. So
I had it at number six and I bumped something else out.
Okay. Well, we know in our house how important streaming is. So at least on a micro level, we know that Disney Plus and other streaming services would make our list.
And we were also probably one of the first customers to make sure our kids stay happy.
Yes. We are proud subscribers of Disney Plus. Disney Plus is a fantastic babysitter.
Then I have another thing that probably had not much to do with the trade war, but again, is sort of in the pop culture realm, I think is an indication of where entrepreneurship is going, where valuation is going, and how much celebrities and influencers have an impact on the world of business and finance. And I'm going to go with the sale of Kylie Cosmetics to Coty Inc. for $600 million. I mean, what would any show about any news headlines be without a mention of the Kardashian-Jenners?
I was afraid you were going to say that.
I have to keep things interesting.
I guess.
You know, Kylie, you know, is a member of the Kardashian-Jenner family. She had created her cosmetics line in 2015. She sold a 51% stake to Coty Inc., like I said, for $600 million. Coty had made a statement upon the sale that in the previous 12 months, it had amassed $177 million in revenue. It sold it, you know, top stores like Ulta. This plus Kylie's other revenue streams made her a billionaire, one of the youngest billionaires.
Well, suffice it to say, regardless of how you feel about the Kardashians, they are, from a business standpoint, doing something right. I have my own feelings and thoughts, but I'll reserve comment. That being said, I think what you highlighted initially really speaks volumes as to what's changing in the world of business. And the fact of the matter is most business initiatives are driven by media, and more importantly, even social media. And the fact is that entire empire is built around social media. Being an influencer, having a voice, and disseminating information and content in mass in real time. And that's what drives these brands and many others. The concern I would have if I was on the board or an investor in Coty is what happens if that influence diminishes? These things can turn on a dime. Somebody with a strong reputation one day has no reputation the next, and the entire empire is built on that. So as we've discussed this past year repeatedly about successful companies build moats. They have barriers to entry, and they're insulated from the vagaries of market tumult. My concern would be, if I was parking $600 million into a business acquisition, would be, what happens if someday the Kardashians are not popular? What does that do to the brand?
And speaking of a fall from grace, Kylie hasn't seen it yet, but one that was on your list that was on mine is WeWork. Mm. And sort of coupling that with, you know, what is the next decade of IPOs going to look like? What did we learn from WeWork and other IPOs like Beyond, Lyft, etc. Things that were sort of labeled as technology companies or new exciting companies, but didn't really launch the way we expected them to go. I also had one in that falls in my number two that I didn't hear from you, which was sort of the world of privacy scandals. And to me, this sort of falls in the realm of data and, you know, our top scandal being the Facebook scandal and their privacy breaches and sort of what this means for that company and other tech companies that were, you know, flying high. People hadn't really thought about these things. And now all of a sudden, these companies are being faced with a lot of questions about user data, how it's being used. You know, Amazon had some issues with their Alexa. I'm sort of putting that in the privacy scandal top two as well.
I would certainly put that on my top 10 list for the year. And if we were doing a top list for the decade, I would put it probably in my top five.
That's interesting.
Because I feel like these privacy issues have been evolving over the last several years. Cambridge Analytica, going back a couple of years, a number of major breaches with the credit agencies about 2 or 3 years ago. So I would almost say that this could be much bigger than just something that makes the top list, the top five list for 2019. I think it could make the top five list for the entire decade.
Yeah, and some of these breaches that we experienced happened well before 2019, but we saw the repercussions in 2019, including the congressional hearings with Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg, backlash from Amazon with Alexa, that these things maybe have been going on, the actual breaches or scandals happened before, you know, back in 2018 and previously, but really we saw the effects of this in 2019 and obviously it's ongoing. So, you know, not to get ahead of ourselves, but really something to continue to watch in 2020.
Fair point.
And I'm going to go with a number one that you had on your list, but at number two, which was Boeing. If we're talking about sort of the American economy, what, you know, is woven through the fabric of our economy, our well-being, our business news, to me, Boeing is it. I mean, it is really a part of who we are, who our economy is. And with these things, you know, with Boeing facing the troubles that it is, it's really starting to affect the economy at large. And what does this mean for the American economy, the global economy, and really who we are as exporters?
Well, I think globally, Boeing had tremendous standing in terms of serving as a paradigm of manufacturing prowess. And the fact that Boeing is an American company, I believe it's based in Seattle, it's been around for generations, and it has essentially defined aviation, was a great source of pride across America. It was the jewel in the manufacturing crown. And this year unleashed a great deal of skepticism around Boeing's processes, Boeing's culture. There have been numerous reports around deficiencies in Boeing's assessment of safety procedures. And of course, if that indeed is true, then it translates to these great human tragedies. So I think, to your point, this was one of the biggest corporate falls from grace that we've seen in a generation. We can look at major corporate accounting scandals that were a product of malfeasance and greed. But the reality is, Boeing is something so much bigger and so much more powerful in terms of what it represents for America. If we can't keep people safe on the planes that we build, then how good are we in terms of anything we build? At least that's you know, my sense of how this is perceived.
And I think that is a great, since we both had Boeing on our list, and it sort of is a part of a lot of layers in our economy and our identity, I think Boeing might be a good one to delve into. So let's do that. So Boeing, let's back up just a little bit. And this is where, you know, the story is really sad. It isn't really a business story. This is a story about people who lost their lives. According to sources like CNET, the two crashes of Boeing's 737 MAX 8 killed 346 people. After the second crash, the plane was grounded around the world, and they believe that it was a fault in the design of the technical elements of the plane. As of August, according to sources like Forbes, the plane was still in production. They pulled back production of the plane, Boeing did, to about 42 aircraft per month, but they weren't being delivered. Nobody was buying them. And as recently as December, according to the New York Times business section, Boeing had sold roughly 5,000 of the jets, making it the best-selling aircraft in history, and it had built nearly 400 of the MAX jets that have yet to be delivered. I mean, I guess the good news is that it's grounded, so people are safe from a similar crash happening. But for Boeing, this means a lot of expensive inventory that is sitting in their warehouses not being bought or delivered.
Well, that's absolutely right. And if you look at the price of an Air Max, depending on which one, it starts at around $100 million per airplane and can go as high as nearly $140 million per airplane. So you're talking about a substantial loss of revenue, some of which was probably booked already by Boeing. And hence, you've seen a dramatic decline in the company's stock price.
And obviously the most important thing here, and it goes without saying, that is safety of the people who are flying. But when we look at this as a business story, this is a big deal for Boeing and really the American economy. I mean, that's a lot of money that was meant to be coming in from building these aircraft. The money has been spent on building them and now they're not being sold.
Right, right. And, you know, I think it goes without saying, and I think you and I are in agreement on this, you simply cannot put a value on even one human life. It is something of infinite value in my opinion, and I believe in your opinion. So that's a topic for an entirely different discussion about the humanity behind this horrible, horrible tragedy. Looking at it simply from financial terms, effect will certainly reverberate throughout our economy because we're talking about thousands of lost planes or lost orders and $100 million plus in terms of revenue for each plane. You can do basic math around that and simply recognize that it is going to spill over in terms of jobs. And we're not talking about just the Boeing employees. We're talking about all of the companies and all of their employees that support Boeing, the individual part manufacturers, the design institutes that come up with the schematics for each of these components. There's a whole ecosystem built around this one plane. And with production at a halt and unlikely to resume, it's clear as day that this is going to have a spillover effect and a rather substantial one.
And there's even rumors that they're going to build an entirely new plane, which is if it's what needs to happen for the safety of its passengers, obviously that's what should happen. But in terms of Boeing as a company, that could be devastating to not ever to be able to use the inventory that they have and to have to rebuild all those planes.
Well, they'll take a major write down. It'll certainly impact the company's stock price. It will certainly impact the company's credibility, but I do believe Boeing can recover from this. I think right now, any dramatic move will be perceived as a hasty one. They let go of their CEO last week. They brought on a new CEO, and that's already creating waves on Wall Street. People are critical of that move, and even more so, the new CEO they brought in, who's a veteran of GE, who may not have the wherewithal to steer this company through these troubled waters. So I think Boeing needs to take a hard look at what they've done wrong and come up with a plan and take their time to build that plan around how they're going to recover, whether that involves a new plane, whether it involves an entirely new business model related to this plane. I don't know what the answer is. My point is simply that they need to really think this through. This is a major decision.
Yes, and I think looking ahead to 2020, let's hope they find solutions on multiple fronts, including the safety of the plane, and then also that, you know, Boeing can continue to be a major powerhouse in the fabric of the American economy and have them do it in a way that is safe and that's productive, and that, you know, keeps safety of passengers in mind first, where they're working with the necessary agencies to do that, and then they can move forward and, like any good business, make money and keep the economy at a good pace.
Well, and I think a big part of this, to your point, keeping the safety of passengers first, I think Boeing needs a major PR revamp, because in the aftermath of this tragedy, they really did not do, in my opinion, a good job of addressing the human element. Things just seemed very clinical, almost as if it's presented by a number of engineers. The reality is you've got 346 families that are grieving the loss of loved ones for something that probably could have been prevented. Just a horrible, horrible human tragedy. And I think Boeing could have done a better job addressing that. I understand that these situations are never easy. I would certainly not want to be in the position of a Boeing spokesperson or a Boeing executive during those times. But at the same time, I think it's simple common sense that you really need to take a thoughtful approach to how you address the loss of human life and then talk about the business itself.
And speaking of public relations and sort of switching gears to maybe a little bit of a lighter note, I think we should talk a little bit about WeWork. Well, Ruben, can you give us a little bit of a rundown here? What happened with WeWork?
Well, we could do an entire show, probably an entire series on WeWork, but I'll spare you the gory details and summarize it with just a few bullet points. WeWork is a tale of a company that branded itself as more of a high-growth technology company, when in reality, it was and still is a real estate company. WeWork raised about $12 billion in capital over the last few years and was at its peak valued at about $47 billion. The company was scheduled to go public this year, but upon filing their S-1 with the SEC, investors started to take a closer look at WeWork's P&L statement, its balance sheet, and also around that time, a number of internal crises surfaced around workplace impropriety. We'll just leave it at that. To make a very long story short, the valuation imploded. The CEO was ousted. The company is now valued around $10 billion, which is less than what was even invested in the company. Ultimately, WeWork is proving a cautionary tale in the realm of overhyped, overvalued IPOs.
And the IPO was pulled.
It was pulled.
Is there any discussion about it eventually going public?
Sure. I never say never. I'm sure there's a plan. Somebody has an idea. People certainly want to recoup their investment and then some. But right now, what you're seeing is headlines dominated by lawsuits.
And what can we learn from this WeWork tale here? An overvaluation that crumbles and pulling of an IPO.
Do your homework. That's the biggest lesson here. If you're an investor in WeWork, do your homework. Understand what you're buying. Is this a tech company or is this a real estate company? And understand what the company does and understand where the company is headed.
And look at the P&L.
At the end of the day, look at the P&L.
And this is basically good advice for any investment, whether it's a large investment in a company like WeWork or just your everyday investments. Really know what you're getting into.
I think that summarizes it. Absolutely.
Ruben, while we're speaking of lessons, we learned some lessons from WeWork. What other lessons could we take from 2019?
I think the age-old lesson is read the financial statements. I think that's a big one. It is something that burned a lot of investors in the case of WeWork. Beyond was, at the time, a successful IPO that very quickly crumbled, and there were several others as well. Look at the numbers. Don't get caught up in the hype. I think that's one of the most important lessons, and one that sadly recurs every few years. Secondly, I would say do not discount the impact of geopolitics, because they can have a spillover effect across business ecosystems. Fear, uncertainty, all of this fuels business decisions. Business decisions fuel financial markets. So I think it's very important to place heavy emphasis on the headlines from the geopolitical community. And lastly, I would say it's important to pay close attention to the Fed. Not to say that people ignore the Fed, but I think there is a very solid board of governors in place that has proven itself to be thoughtful and analytical. And I think they will continue to operate with an emphasis on managing against economic risk. So I think the Fed is, in essence, a good signal in terms of where the economy is headed.
And as we turn over a new leaf to 2020, a new decade, I know there's a lot of people who are ready to leave 2019 behind them. As you mentioned, there are a few things to look forward to, you know, ahead to keep an eye on. The Fed is definitely one of them. You know, the Fed cutting rates and keeping them low was going to make my top five list, but I sort of pushed it down a little bit. But you mentioned it, and that's definitely something to watch for in 2020.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I would also add, in 2020, keep an eye on how the election unfolds, what's going on with the campaigns. Pay attention to the primaries, pay attention to the front runners, and pay attention to their platforms.
And as we close out a year with a stock market that has seen some all-time high numbers, what do you think we should look out for there? Is it going to stay high?
I think if I knew the answer to that question, I probably wouldn't be on this podcast. I'd be sailing around the world on my yacht. I think that looking ahead with regard to the stock market and even related financial markets, I think the most important driver is ultimately corporate earnings. Everything else we've discussed feeds into corporate earnings. Geopolitical forces, trade wars, scandals, these things ultimately distill themselves down to corporate earnings. If corporate earnings remain strong and companies continue to exhibit financial growth, then we can justify a soaring stock market.
I mean, 2019 is definitely a year to remember. I have no doubt that 2020 is going to be another one for the record books. You know, looking out for the upcoming elections, the presidential election, let's see what the Fed does. Like you said, you know, as these companies, these tech companies IPO and other companies IPO, and we have reality TV stars becoming billionaires, let's make sure we're really looking into these to numbers to see if, you know, the numbers are speaking the truth.
I think that's a good point. I think that as we've sought to capture throughout this past year, it's also important to understand the convergence between Main Street and Wall Street, and even the individual elements that drive that convergence, like media, geopolitics, how they all come together and coalesce to financial performance. I think we need to pay attention to everything. Be a student of pop culture as much as you are a student of finance.
Well, I like that advice.
As you, as I'm well aware.
Well, Ruben, thank you as always for your insights and your expertise. This has been another episode of Wall Street to Main Street. Again, I'm your host, Emily Vani, here with my co-host and, of course, my husband, finance expert and author, Ruben Vani.
Thank you, Emily. Happy New Year, everyone.